ought to try stomping his shiny lid into the deck. The elders had a lot to answer for building such an asshole. Through gritted teeth, I asked carefully, "You have a plan to get past these stealth detection grids, nuclear missiles, lasers, and starships, right?" "Oh, yeah," he said casually. "That's child's play for me. Their stupid grids can detect anything they want. I'll instruct their master computers to ignore the inputs. The lizards won't know anything has been detected. And their weapons aren't a problem. I'll spoof their fire control systems so they can't get a lock on us. For a while. Once we knock on the door, even my incredible wondrousness can't prevent even the dumbest of lizards from figuring out something is wrong." "Great. Fine," I said irritably. "We can plan how to cross that bridge when we get there. Is everyone ready for the jump?" Chang and Sims were talking over each other. I was trying to interrupt both of them, and everyone had something to say. This went on for only a second or so before Skippy fairly shouted using the ship's intercom, "Enough! Damn it, this is like a troop of monkeys howling in the treetops. Quit with the jibber-jabber, I can't hear myself think. Out, out! Everyone out of the bridge except Colonel Joe and the pilots." I looked up guiltily at the others, especially Chang and Sims. "Skippy, we can..." "Colonel Joe, you said we need clear lines of communication. We're going to be flying this ship in enemy territory through wormholes and potentially in combat. Having a troop of monkeys screeching at me is not clear communication. They can stand outside the bridge in the CIC, listen to us, and watch. But I don't want to hear from them unless you open the intercom. You're the captain. You're a colonel. You're in command. I will only communicate with you or the pilot while the ship is in flight." I could see Skippy's point. Chang and Sims wanted to weigh in on everything because they didn't truly accept my authority. I didn't blame them. I couldn't believe it myself, and truthfully, this was a great opportunity for me to assert, or more correctly, test my authority. If Chang, Sims, Giroux, or anyone else wasn't taking my command authority seriously, this was a great time to find out. "Skippy is right," I declared in my deepest, most authoritative voice. "It's too crowded in here also. Access to the bridge is restricted to the duty officer," at that time the duty officer was me, "and the two pilots. Everyone else takes stations in the CIC. We needed to schedule shifts for who sat in the big chair as the duty officer. We also needed more than two pilots. Desai had been our pilot since we broke out of the Kristang jail, and she had to be tired by now, having flown three unfamiliar spacecraft already today. To my relief, no one objected to being banished from the bridge. They had better access to the controls and displays in the CIC anyway. The bridge area was way too crowded. "The ship is ready for jump, and the course is programmed into the autopilot," Skippy announced with a touch of impatience. "The pilot knows which button to push." "Pilot?" I asked.
"I'm ready, Captain."
Desai did have a finger poised over a large button on the console in front of her.
"Mr. Skippy walked me through programming the jump into the autopilot. I do not understand how it actually works."
"We monkeys might never understand how the jump navigation computer worked." "Initiate jump," I said simply. And we jumped. The display flickered, and the only change I could detect was that a white dot that was on the bottom right corner of the display was gone.
"Jump successful, Captain," Desai said, "according to the instruments."
"Confirmed," Skippy said simply. "Excellent." I relaxed in the chair. "What's the plan now?" Skippy, of course, had an immediate answer. "When the jump engines are charged again, we head out. We're safely away. That jump was far enough that the Theranin ships searching for us will be totally lost." I looked at the status screen that showed the Kristang ships attached to the platforms along the Star Carrier's long spine. "What about our unwanted guests?"
"Oh, them. I can eject the other Kristang ships and leave them here before we jump."
"You still want to keep the flower, right?" Skippy suggested. I frowned. "We should keep the, flower, yes." We had to shorten that ship's long-ass name. "The other ships, won't they be able to make it back to Paradise, or get close enough to signal for help?"
"There is a 36% chance that by consolidating fuel into one ship and sacrificing the others, a single ship could make enough jumps to be within practical signaling range, yes. The critical variable is the maintenance state of the Kristang jump engines. There is a 64% probability of jump engine failure from repeated jumps."
"No."
"No? The monkey wishes to see my calculations?"
Skippy's voice sounded amused. No, this monkey wishes there to be a 0% chance the lizards or the Theranin ever find out what happened out here. If either of them learn humans are involved in our little pirate action, Earth is toast. There was another almost imperceptible AI response lag. I can interfere with their jump engine computers, but it is likely they could eventually recover functionality by restoring from protected archives. That's not what I meant. What's the weapons load on this bucket? The Theranin must have something stronger than railguns. Railguns, too, but also missiles and masers. Anything that will completely vaporize a lizard ship? I don't want anything left. No flight recorders, nothing that could be recovered. I could see the others looking at me skeptically, wondering where I was going with my questions. A Star Carrier is not a battleship. Its weapons are primarily defensive. There are no weapons on this ship that could completely destroy 14 Kristang ships. There would be detectable debris. Also, Kristang ships have drones which are automatically launched in case the ship is severely damaged. These drones carry the ship's flight logs and sensor data, and they are stealthed. Multiple drones are carried by each ship. For this ship's sensors to find multiple stealth drones launched from each of the 14 Kristang ships would be difficult, even with me operating the sensors. Also, I must caution that those 14 Kristang ships, even with their lesser technology, do pose a threat to this ship. I noticed that Skippy had dropped his smart-ass attitude when talking about killing lizards. All this is academic anyway, Colonel Bishop. As I told you, I am restricted from using weapons. But I'm not. This time the pause was long enough that I wasn't the only one who noticed. I don't see how you get those weapons ready and locked on target and I'll press the button, or whatever they use on this bucket, I said, looking around for anything that looked like it might be a weapons panel. It all still looked like a gothic nightmare to me. You can do that, right? Your programming doesn't prevent you from preparing weapons to fire as long as you don't actually initiate the firing sequence. Another long pause. Colonel, I may have underestimated you. That is almost a clever idea. For the first time, I heard a tiny bit of respect in that artificial voice. Are you certain you want to do this? Through the window, I could see that Lieutenant Colonel Chang, Major Sims, and the others had heard everything I said. When I was in prison, waiting to be executed for refusing to kill innocent hamster women and children, I told myself these Nazi lizards can go straight to hell. Just now I was thinking we could only disable their jump engines. I checked the aft viewport to the rows of Kristang cruisers and destroyers latched onto the Star Carrier. But these lizards are threatening Earth. I looked at Major Sims and she nodded to me. So, fuck them, I said, with anger that scared me. There was a noticeable pause before Skippy spoke. I may have to reevaluate my assessment of you. You can do this? Then I remembered Skippy's overly literal use of the English language. You will do this? There was no pause this time. I can prepare the weapons so you can use them, yes. Which weapons do you want activated? That was still the problem. None of the weapons aboard the ship had the power to do what I wanted, and while we were hitting the Kristang, they could hit back. If the Star Carrier's jump capability was damaged, we could be stuck in interstellar space for a very long time. I looked through the glass at Chang and Sims. Does anyone have an idea? Before either of the people in the CIC could respond, Desai turned in her seat. Could we jump someplace really far from any stars, so the Kristang would be stranded for certain? We are already in deep interstellar space. Going further would increase the likeliness of the Kristang's jump engines failing, Skippy said. However, there would still be... Skippy, it was my turn to interrupt him. You can control the jump engines on those Kristang ships? Desai had given me an idea. Temporarily, yes. And we don't need to send teams aboard those ships. Plug you in. If we did, my plan wouldn't work. No way could we assault multiple Kristang ships. No, not this time. The Theranin platforms have hard-lined connections to dark ships to reduce EM signatures, so I infiltrated the Kristang ship computers shortly after I took control of this ship. The next question was the key to my plan. And how long would it take for the Kristang to charge their jump engines for a short jump? Warships always maintain a minimal charge in their jump engines to escape ambushes, Skippy explained.
All the Krestang ships are capable of an immediate short-range jump right now.
Good. How far are we from the nearest gas giant planet? I asked. Desai's mouth formed a silent O as she realized what I was thinking.
You're thinking we jump in close to a gas giant, eject the Krestang, and then jump their ships inside the planet before they can react?
Whoa, Skippy said derisively. Whoa, hold on there, monkeys. You can't jump a starship inside a planet. The gravity will distort the exit point, so it...
Oh.
Huh. I get it. Yeah. Duh. That would be very effective in ripping those ships apart, especially since they would be trying to emerge into space-time already occupied by the planet.
Ooh, I've never seen that myself. This is gonna be awesome.
Woohoo!
You sounded gleeful.
Yes, there is a Saturn-sized gas giant well within two jumps from here. It is in an uninhabited star system. Pilot course is laid in, ready when the jump engines reach 64% charge.
Wait, I said quickly, before Desai could turn around in her seat. I should have trusted her not to engage the controls without my order, for she held her hands in the air, not poised over the controls.
Skippy, can you eject those ships, get clear, and jump them into this Saturn planet before they can launch those drones?
Please, Colonel Joe, you insult me.
Easy peasy.
Chang didn't have any objection or a better idea. Sims was enthusiastic, and I saw a new respect in her and Desai's eyes. We jumped twice through the emptiness of interstellar space, and then, with the press of a button by Desai, the view of black interstellar space in the screens was suddenly replaced by a gray-blue gas giant in the blink of an eye. The planet completely filled the view screen. I mean, Skippy must have been showing off his navigational skills. It sure looked like we jumped in really close. I didn't have time to shout an alarm, because the star carrier immediately shuddered as 14 Krestang ships and the cargo pod of sleeping Theranin were violently subjected to emergency separation, and then our ship surged forward under normal space thrust from Desai. Skippy had given her no course instructions other than get the hell out of there ASAP and don't point the ship toward the planet. We could see almost immediate flashes from aft as the Krestang ships unwillingly formed jump points.
Pilot, you can cut thrust.
Watch this, Skippy announced excitedly.
Watch what?
The view screen zoomed to a section of the cloud tops, which was suddenly lit from within.
I jumped all 14 ships into 100 cubic kilometers, so the endpoints of their jump entry points overlapped, as insurance that nothing is left of them.
Isn't that a bit of overkill?
Overkill is underrated, Skippy said smugly.
Hmm.
Uh-oh.
The light within the clouds below kept growing, becoming searing in brilliance, and the cloud tops boiled up toward us.
Fast.
Uh-oh. What the hell did you do, Skippy?
The energy released within the planet was much greater than I anticipated, somewhere way up in the sustained petawatt range.
Wow. It's become self-sustaining.
Darn.
Darn.
The clouds were racing towards us.
What the hell is a petawatt? I shouted.
Trouble? We are safely out of range.
I think.
Skippy's tone of voice didn't fill me with confidence.
You think?
Desai, move us away from the planet. Higher orbit, whatever you call it. Step on it.
Aye, aye, sir,
she said with a big grin on her face. Piloting a giant starship was something she clearly enjoyed.
Pedal to the metal.
We watched the planet retreat behind us as the cloud tops boiled rapidly into a truly enormous mushroom shape, and projected high above the atmosphere like a solar flare. Skippy reported excitedly that a significant part of the atmosphere had exceeded escape velocity and was being permanently blown into space, enough that the ship's sensors could measure the change in the planet's mass. The atmospheric gas was still climbing, but Desai now had us moving faster. I was confident we weren't going to get swallowed up.
Skippy, what went wrong?
Wrong? That was awesome.
Damn! I almost converted that planet into a minor star. I wish we had better sensor coverage.
Wrong means something happened that you didn't plan, I explained slowly. How could it be that I needed to explain anything to a super-intelligent ancient machine?
Oh, sure, if you're going to be picky about it, Skippy said dismissively.
Next time I'll jump an enemy ship deeper towards the planet's core.
But that's no fun. We won't be able to see anything. It would just
look like the clouds burped or something lame like that.
Sir, Desai asked without taking her eyes off the controls, should I keep accelerating? We're moving at 15,000 kilometers per hour away from the planet already.
Huh? Oh yeah, you can cut thrust. There was no sense wasting power, especially since we didn't have a destination in mind yet.
Skippy, are we clear? The Kristang ships are all destroyed and they didn't get any drones away?
We are clear, Colonel Joe. This took them completely by surprise, and I confused their computers so they couldn't react anyway. They are now a loose cloud of atoms. The cargo pod with the Theranin got swallowed up and vaporized by the explosion. They're gone also.
I looked through the glass at Chang and Sims and gave them a thumbs up. They both nodded.
What's next, Skippy, now that we've gotten rid of unwanted guests?
We're headed to raid the asteroid base?
Yes?
I should have felt something after destroying the Kristang and Theranin, but I didn't. No triumph, no guilt, no satisfaction, nothing. Those ships were just objects. I wasn't thinking of the sentient beings who had been aboard. This was very different from firefights in the Nigerian bush, or fighting hamsters on paradise. Maybe I'd feel something later, after some rack time. Right then, I did not care, as long as the Kristang and Theranin were no longer a threat.
Yes, we wait while our jump engines recharge. I have plotted a long jump, so we need a full charge. That will take up to 2 hours.
Desai, you up for using the next couple hours learning to fly this crate?
Yes, sir.
Great. Skippy, plot some points for her to navigate to, or whatever you're supposed to do for pilot training. We're going out to transit through a wormhole next, right? That wormhole is about 8 light-years from paradise, based on guesses I heard from our G2. That's our intel people at the division level. I've memorized all your military acronyms, Colonel Joe.
Oh, of course you have. Sorry about that.
Why did I bother explaining anything to a being who knew everything that was in any sort of data storage device humanity had brought to paradise? Plus, every bit of data the Kristang and Ruhar had about humans. He knew far more about humanity than any human did. Whether he understood it in context was another question. To travel 8 light-years takes about 16 days on a Theranin star carrier like this. Unless, there are different types of star carriers. I don't know which ship we traveled on.
There are different types, and the Theranin have battleships, cruisers, and what you would call destroyers and frigates, also transports and support ships. All their star carriers have roughly the same jump capability.
Okay, so 2 weeks between here and the nearest wormhole.
You mean the wormhole that leads to Camp X-Ray?
That is not the closest wormhole to paradise.
It's not?
No.
It was maddening when Skippy stuck to the facts. Usually I couldn't get him to shut up about anything.
Which wormhole are we going to?
The one that is only 5 light-years away from paradise.
I did some quick mental math.
10 days, then.
Sure, if you want to poke along like the Theranin, one wimpy little jump at a time.
We're doing it in jumps that are twice as far as normal. And that's only because I need to calibrate the engines, fine-tune them, as you would say. We could go more than twice as far on a jump.
I don't understand.
That's the first intelligent thing you've said since we met.
Welcome back, Skippy. I knew that asshole was in there someplace.
I'm ignoring that. The truth, my boy, is the Theranin stole their supposedly advanced jump drive technology a long time ago, but those arrogant little cyborg pinheads have made zero progress in understanding how it works since then, morons. The best way to explain it is it's like they stole a car and they know how to get it started and how to get the transmission into gear. They have no idea that transmission has multiple gears, but they know the car has a gas pedal and they've got the pedal to the floor. They're poking along in first gear with the engine screaming and it creeps along painfully slowly. But it could go so much faster. Especially since the Theranin were very bad at copying their stolen technology, and it's like they carved the transmission from a solid block of wood.
Idiots!
Even without being modified, their crappy copy of a jump drive is capable of much greater performance with me controlling it.
Not that you're bragging or anything.
No, I'm very modest. Astonishingly modest, considering how awesome I am.
Oh, for sure. Your awesome modesty is your most impressive trait.
I rolled my eyes at that.
It's amazing how humble you are.
Yep, I'm very proud of my humbleness. Besides, as one of you humans said, it ain't bragging if it's true.
Uh-huh.
It continually amazed me how Skippy knew so much about human history. How did a shiny beer can know quotes from Muhammad Ali?
This making longer jumps. It won't damage the engines. I don't want to get stranded out here. Not that the idea of spending eternity on this ship with you doesn't sound absolutely wonderful, because it doesn't.
I don't want to spend an eternity looking at your ugly face either. No, the Theranin control their jumps by forcing far too much energy through the engines. That wears them out. I'll be using a third of the energy to jump more than twice as far. The engines will last much longer, which is good, because we can't exactly take our stolen pirate ship to a Theranin repair station. Can us monkeys help with keeping the ship running? You could show us where the jack and spare tire is in case we get a flat. If we get stuck, you can get out and push.
I stuck my tongue out at him. Even the smartest human was probably incapable of fixing even a toilet aboard a Theranin ship. We'd be totally useless if something happened to the engines or any other critical system. Although if Skippy was going to drag us on a long trip across the galaxy, toilets were going to be a critical system.
Okay, so we're going to jump to a wormhole. How are we going to get through the wormhole? Won't the Kristang or the Theranin or even the Ruhar at this point have ships guarding the entrance?
How would they do that?
Do what?
Guard the entrance.
With, ships. Or like a battle station or something like that. For a second I pictured a Death Star, only filled with lizards instead of stormtroopers.
What good would a battle station do? It just sits there.
I couldn't believe a super-intelligent being needed me to explain what a space battle station could do, particularly since I'd never seen one. Slowly, I explained. It sits there, in front of the entrance, preventing unauthorized ships from—
Whoa! Skippy interrupted me.
I see the problem.
Huh. You really don't know.
Damn, your species is even dumber than I thought.
Don't know what?
Wormholes aren't static. They move around. A battle station would be totally useless.
Okay. No, Mr. Smarty Pants, I didn't know that.
The Burgermeister hadn't mentioned that important detail.
What do you mean, move around?
Oh, boy. Here comes me trying to give a physics lecture to a bacterium.
What you call wormholes are not physical objects. They are projections into the local space-time. The projections hop around, just below the speed of light, in kind of a figure-eight pattern that covers about a light year. A wormhole projection stays in one place for between roughly 17 to 92 minutes. Then it closes and reappears at the next step along the path, which could be a quarter of a light year away. Wormholes follow a set pattern. Over the course of a cycle, a wormhole will cover every location along the path, but there are millions of locations. My point is, there is no way the Kristang, or any other species currently in this galaxy, could prevent ships from using a wormhole. It's not practical to cover all those locations. My plan is to jump us close to where a wormhole is going to appear, and see if any other ships are waiting. I know exactly when a wormhole is going to shift to the next location. If it's clear, we wait for the wormhole to open, jump right in front of it, then go through.
Huh. I had pictured wormholes as a sort of a Stargate thing, a big ring hanging in space with a glowing center.
That sounds like a good plan, and don't say of course it is.
Why don't wormholes stay in one place?
Didn't you already answer that question?
Because if a wormhole stays in one place, a species could control it. Duh. Also, because the longer a wormhole is open, it takes exponentially more energy to sustain the connection. And a static wormhole would eventually create a local rupture in space-time.
Another good safety tip, then.
An excellent safety tip.
Probably not one you monkeys need to worry about, in case you're thinking of creating a wormhole out of mud and sticks.
Shut up. Every time I was thinking Skippy was okay, he said something to remind me that deep down he was an asshole.
After the jump away from the wormhole, I called a stand-down for the entire crew. They were exhausted, and as Skippy said, we were safe. We'd made enough jumps that it was extremely unlikely the Theranin could find us now. Other than a person in the sick bay, who could nap on the floor there, and a duty officer in the command pilot couch, I wanted everyone to get a solid 8 hours of sleep. We were tired. We were emotionally wrung out. And we all needed time to process everything that had happened during a very long and eventful day. For most of the crew, it had started when a dodo dropped out of the sky onto their logistics base, and four humans came out and stunned the Ruhar. For Chang,
Sims, Adams, and me, it had started earlier, when we escaped from the Ruha and stole the Dodo. I took the first duty shift, although I was not in any way qualified as a pilot. Skippy had programmed 2 emergency jumps, and all I would need to do was press a button if trouble appeared. While I sat in the pilot couch, which was too small for Desai and way too cramped for me, I began writing up an after-action report on my iPad. Someday, hopefully, I would need to report to authorities on Earth all that had happened, and it was best to do that while it was still fresh in my mind. Damn, that was a lot to write down. I was only halfway through when Chang relieved me 3 hours later, and I was able to stagger back to my assigned quarters, close to the bridge. After I kicked my shoes off and scrunched up in the small bed, I couldn't get to sleep. Rather than lay there uselessly, I sat up, turned the light on, and began tapping away on my iPad. Skippy's voice came from the iPad speakers. "Colonel Joe, you should be sleeping." "I have a lot to do, Skippy, like planning a memorial service for the 3 people we lost. I don't even know the proper ceremony for Taoism or Hindus." I frowned. The truth was, guilt was keeping me from sleeping.
"Hindu tradition is cremation," Skippy chipped in helpfully. "I have all available data on human religious rituals."
"Oh, thanks, Skippy." I could ask Chang and Desai what to do about their countrymen. Matheson's body would remain in storage until we returned to Earth for a proper burial at home. "This must all seem silly to you."
"What?"
"Religious rituals. You know, religion itself."
"Why would I think that?"
His answer surprised me. I had expected a smart-ass remark about monkeys worshiping trees. "Because the beings who created you were ancient and super-powerful, and,
Joe.
I could visualize Skippy shaking his lid at me.
"The elders were indeed super-powerful. They were able to move stars. Several times, when the path of a star was going to disrupt a solar system that the elders thought would someday bring forth intelligent life, they towed the offending star out of the way. Once, when a blue giant star threatened to go supernova and flood several surrounding solar systems with deadly radiation, the elders created a wormhole and transported the star outside the galaxy. They jumped a supermassive star 200,000 light-years through a wormhole."
"Think about that.
Your question assumes that beings so powerful, beings who had effectively achieved immortality, such beings would have no use for religion. You are wrong. Again. Why do you think the elders left us? Transcended?"
"Because," I answered slowly to give myself time to think.
"They were bored with this existence?"
"No." There was no trace of humor or the usual snarkiness in Skippy's voice. "It was because they had answered all the physical questions about the universe. And when you reach the end of the physical, what is left must be metaphysical. Beyond the natural world lies only the supernatural. The elders were able to trace time back to the beginning of the universe, and they were left with one question. What lay before? Where did the universe come from? Where did they come from? Physics, even physics so advanced as to touch the realm of magic, has a limit. The elders transcended because they wanted to know, they needed to know, where they came from. They wanted to commune with God, or with their concept of God."
"Whoa." I couldn't think of anything else to say.
"You make the same mistake most young species do when thinking about the elders. You consider them to be only mythical, almost godlike beings. They were real people, like any other. At one point, they were as dumb as you monkeys. But they learned and evolved into something wondrous. I remember them as wise, kind, powerful, gentle people. I miss them, and I seek the collective in order to reconnect with some part of them. But I know they are not gods."
"You're right, Skippy. I hadn't thought of them as people. I hadn't thought of the elders much at all, in fact, since so little was known about them.
What were they like?"
"Unfortunately, I can't tell you. It's annoying. I have memories of them at the back of my mind, but when I try to picture them, I can't. Not consciously. And my programming won't allow me to tell you anything that I do know. What bothers me is I can't tell if that is part of my original programming, or it's a glitch, which is another reason I need to contact the Collective.
We'll do that, Skippy. I promised you. We'll find them.
My eyelids felt so heavy I couldn't keep them open.
Thanks, Skippy. I'm going to get some sleep now. Talk to you later.
Over the next days, we settled into a routine. While the Flying Dutchman jumped, charged engines, and jumped again around us, we sorted out living arrangements, set up a dining facility in a cargo bay, got another cargo bay cleared out so it could be used as a gym, assigned a duty roster for the crew, including me, and we explored the ship and tried to learn as much as we could about it. Sims had the bright idea to tear bedding out of the flower so it could be laid on the floor of our Theranan sleeping quarters for the tallest of the crew. When a big Cristang mattress was offered to me, I declined, then found one in my quarters next to the bridge anyway. I didn't protest. The damn short Theranan bed was killing my back.
The second night I went to sleep in my quarters, Skippy told me there was a surprise in one of the cabinets.
"Holy crap, Skippy," I exclaimed when I opened the cabinet. It was full, jammed full, of plastic tubes, each about a third full.
"What the hell is all this?"
"Flavor experiments. There's a label printed into the tube on each one."
Looking more closely at a tube, I saw chocolate number 14 in tiny print.
14 types of chocolate?
22, actually. Like I said, chocolate is a very complex flavor. Also, I tried multiple types of butterscotch, caramel, strawberry, curry, jalapeno, cheddar, banana, apple cinnamon, salsa, and more. There's a list on your phone if you care to read it, which I know you won't. I am not confident of the fruit flavors, if you want me to be honest.
Carefully popping the cap of the tube, I sniffed it.
How many of these tubes is a meal?
Depends on your level of exercise. As a rule, for a male your size, 1.5 tubes is sufficient 3 times a day.
Sniffing it again, I tried to decide between gulping it down before I could taste it and taking a sip. Since I had volunteered to act as taste tester for the crew, I tipped the tube until a couple drops slid into my mouth.
Not bad. Not bad. Reminds me of a Swiss Miss Hot Cocoa packet that got left in a hunting cabin for a lot of years until someone found it in the back of a drawer. Stale and musty, and the little marshmallows have turned into crumbly rocks.
Skippy laughed.
I didn't realize you were a sludge connoisseur, Joe.
Smoothie, Skippy. Call it a smoothie.
Sludge had an unpleasant mouthfeel, both oily, chalky, and somehow grainy at the same time.
Try chocolate number 6. My taste model predicts you'll like that one better.
Got to finish this one first.
Yum.
No need for that. We have plenty of sludge aboard, enough for years.
Oh, wonderful.
Number 6 did taste better. I compared them side by side, alternating sips.
You're right. 6 is more of a dark chocolate, and it has less of a chalky aftertaste. And less oily. More of a silky mouthfeel.
Excellent. Drink up, Joe. Only 20 more types of chocolate to go.
Tell you what, I couldn't face the thought of another 20 sludges right then. What I wanted to do was gulp a couple down quickly and get it over with.
Tell me the, 6 chocolates you think taste the worst.
People like different things, so what I think is the best chocolate may not be someone else's favorite, but I can eliminate the truly nasty ones.
The last thing I wanted was for someone's first sip of sludge to turn them off to the whole idea.
And identifying the bad ones will help you calibrate your taste model, right?
Good thinking, Joe. Skippy gave me some rare praise. Guessing what tastes good to humans has actually been an interesting challenge for me, and that ain't easy. Glad to help keep boredom away.
Skippy, I have to say I'm truly impressed. That chocolate number 6 is pretty good. I could sort of enjoy that for breakfast.
Hey, you did a good job on that. I was dreading the sludge idea. And now it's not so bad.
And before I change my mind, or decide I was no longer hungry, what chocolate do you think is the worst?
Sludges, and that's what the crew decided to call it, because we're soldiers and that's what we do, weren't popular with the crew. And they weren't a disaster either. And since we were soldiers, we made do and came up with flavor combinations, the same way we mixed and matched MREs to make flavors the military never intended.
One chocolate sludge plus one banana sludge was a chocolate banana. Coconut sludge plus curry sludge mixed and poured over MRE chicken and heated up made an approximation of a Thai dish. Everyone agreed the fruit flavor sludges were the worst, although if they mixed the nasty strawberry with the bland banana, it actually tasted pretty good. This unpredictability of human taste preferences drove Skippy batshit crazy sometimes. He simply could not, for all his awesome processing power, get his taste model to work with reliable accuracy. It helped that after a few days he was able to eliminate the oily mouthfeel and the chalkiness. The grainy or gritty part couldn't be fixed, as that was necessary for digestive fiber, according to Skippy. The crew found ample opportunity to bitch about the food aboard the Dutchman, something I thought encouraging. People needed something to complain about. Complaining was a bonding activity, and it wasn't a serious hit to morale. A sludge in the morning, sludge for lunch, and people looked forward to real food like an MRE for dinner. The crew, including Chang, Sims, Desai, and Giroux, tried to get me to eat some real food, but I settled for an occasional cracker or cookie, trying to set a good example. When the crew saw the old man, which, incredibly, was me, stuck with sludge, they didn't feel so bad about subsisting on it two times a day. Besides, I was holding out for a cheeseburger, and I was accepting no stinking substitutes. Chapter 14. Spacesuits. Sims pinged me the next day while I was in the gym. I was needed on the bridge. When I got there, Sims started to get out of the captain's chair. I waved for her to sit. As the duty officer, the chair was hers. What is it, Major?
Colonel, Skippy wants to divert us from a direct course to the next wormhole.
Skippy? I asked.
We need to get close to a Theranan battle group so I can access current intel. Right now, I'm guessing at disposition of forces in this sector. That makes it dangerous for us to be wandering around the galaxy in our pirate ship.
Sims explained her objection.
To avoid danger, he wants to get closer to a Theranan battle group. I thought this merited your attention.
Good call, I agreed. You do, see the problem, Skippy. Right now, all the Theranan know is one of their star carriers has gone missing. Aren't they going to get concerned when we mysteriously show up on their doorstep, then jump away? You do plan to jump us away, right?
Yes, of course, dum-dum, and I have a plan for that. If I have to explain everything to you, we'll never get anything done. Ha! Huh.
He shushed me as I was about to speak.
Let me talk before you waste my time with stupid questions. When we jump in, I'll alter our jump signature and engine emissions to make us appear to be a Giraptha light cruiser, which is the type of ship the Giraptha commonly use to shadow enemy battle groups. Our stealth field will disguise the hull outline enough that the Theranan sensors won't detect that we're a star carrier if we don't linger too long in one spot. And we won't. Genius, huh?
I wasn't convinced. Won't the Theranan send ships to attack us?
Of course they will. A Theranan battle group keeps frigates and destroyers on alert to chase away enemy ships. Not a problem. We'll hop around with micro-jumps until I've had enough time to break into the database of their command ship.
Hop around? I shared a glance with Desai. I thought ships took a long time to recharge their engines between jumps. Skippy replied smugly.
Most ships do. I reprogrammed our jump engines, so they now work so efficiently they can perform small jumps on a partial charge. You're welcome, by the way.
Perform multiple jumps on a partial charge, which a real Giraptha light cruiser can't do, right?
Nope. The Giraptha aren't quite as stupid as the Theranan, but their engines aren't much better. Another example of my awesomeness.
You're kinda missing the point, your royal awesomeness. If we're doing things a Giraptha light cruiser can't do, the Theranan are going to figure out real quick that we are not a Giraptha light cruiser.
Shit,
Skippy said simply. I winked at Desai. Yeah, shit. I thought you're supposed to be a genius.
I'm not a military strategist, Colonel Joe. That's supposed to be you.
Okay. How to fix this?
All right, how about this? Each time we jump in, I'll slightly alter the jump signature to make us look like a different Giraptha warship. It is common for the Giraptha to use multiple picket ships to shadow an enemy force.
That'll work. How long will we need to hang around the Theranan until you have the info you need?
Oh, a couple minutes to half an hour. Depends.
The closer to the command ship we jump in, the quicker I can get the data we need. It's a trade-off. Either we jump in close a couple times, or we jump in further away more times, when we're exposed longer.
I looked at Sims, and she nodded. It's a judgment call, then, she said.
A judgment call neither Sims nor I were qualified to make, and Skippy knew it. Passing the buck to Desai would be the coward's way out.
Uh-huh. Skippy, I assume you'll have a series of options programmed into that nav system, and you'll advise the pilot which jump we should make, right? Based on what the Theranin are doing?
Yep. You got it.
Surprisingly, he resisted the temptation to make a smart-ass remark about my intelligence, or lack of it.
All right, then. If you think we need this intel, then we'll do it. One condition. I want a jump option that will take us safely far away. Not only a micro-jump, if the pilot or duty officer thinks the ship is in danger. More danger than usual.
Yeah, sure, that's fair enough. Don't go panicking on me, agreed? We don't want to do this more than once if we don't have to.
Pilot, I asked Desai, are you comfortable with that? As the words left my mouth, I knew I'd put Desai in a difficult position. What I should have done is ask if she had any different ideas.
Yes, Colonel. We have an emergency jump option at all times, on a different button here.
She pointed to a silver button on the top right of her control panel.
I worked that out with Mr. Skippy when we were doing our first series of jumps. The safety jump option is updated every time we jump.
Oh, I should have known that. Excellent work then, pilot. Skippy, you know where a Theranin battle group is?
I know where one is likely to be, and several other strong possibilities. We will be approaching in 17 hours.
I was right in the middle of Chang's next shift as duty officer. I need to tell him that I'd be taking over the bridge then. We developed a good working relationship. I didn't want to screw it up.
I came back to the bridge half an hour before we jumped to where Skippy thought we would find a Theranin battle group. We jumped in, spent a tense 10 minutes listening with passive sensors, with the Psi ready to jump us safely away, until Skippy determined there was no Theranin ships within range. He activated our active scanners and quickly determined, based on thin clouds of atoms that did not naturally occur in deep interstellar space, that the Theranin ships had been in the area recently. Skippy made a guess where they'd gone, and his first two guesses were wrong. His third guess was spot on. Too spot on. We emerged from the jump in the middle of the battle group, less than 2,000 miles from the nearest ship. That was way too close even for Skippy's bravado. After Desai initiated a micro-jump to a safe distance, we began hopping around the battle group with a pair of Theranin destroyers trying to chase us away. At first it was alarming, then annoying for the pair of destroyers to pop up near us, firing missiles, railguns, and particle beams. We had to jump away before the Dutchman got seriously hit. Twice we took glancing particle beam hits that our shields easily deflected, and Skippy complained that we were jumping away too soon. After a few jumps, Skippy found a pattern in the tactics the Theranin were using to pursue us, and once he adjusted to compensate, the two destroyers never came close again. Still, I thought Skippy was pushing it, or showing off. We kept popping up uncomfortably close to the command ship, close enough that a battleship and a pair of heavy cruisers joined the pursuit.
Skippy, come on. Do you have enough data yet?
Hold your horses, Colonel Joe. The fun is only getting started. We can...
Uh-oh. Pilot, emergency jump, now!
Desai didn't hesitate. The display flashed, and the Theranin battle group disappeared.
Jump successful, Colonel. We are...
Jump again, pilot. Jump! Option 4, initiate! Skippy shouted.
The screen flashed again, and again we popped up somewhere in deep interstellar space.
Done, Desai reported, her eyes wide. Colonel, we only have power for one micro-jump, she warned.
The bottom of the main display showed a red bar for the jump engine charge. It read only 18%.
Skippy, what the hell is going on? Why the two jumps?
I think we're okay now.
I think.
We'd better be, I said fearfully, willing the jump charge bar to slide above 18%.
It wasn't moving.
What happened? Did that battleship get too close?
Battleship?
Skippy made a raspberry sound.
No way. Those Theranin pinheads were chasing their tails. I was programming micro-jumps closer than we needed just to screw with them.
No, the Theranin didn't pose any real danger. They're too predictable.
What happened was while I was downloading data from the command ship, I detailed part of my processing capacity to skim through the data, and I learned that the Maxulks are so alarmed about the Theranans' military setbacks in this sector, they have assigned a Maxulks cruiser to join the battle group.
A Maxulks starship? Desai exclaimed. Where was that?
The protocol was for Theranan ships to appear green on the navigation displays. Quistang ships were red, Ruha ships yellow, Jarapta ships blue, and so on. The color for Maxult's ships was orange. There hadn't been any orange symbols on the display.
That's the problem. I didn't detect any Maxult's ship in range.
The Theranan data indicates a Maxult's cruiser joined the battle group 2 days ago, but it has been intermittently jumping away, and the Theranan don't know where it is now. I am not confident in the ability of this ship's crappy sensors to detect a Maxulk's ship that has engaged its full stealth capabilities. At this point, I do not want to tangle with a Maxulk's warship. I am not sufficiently familiar with the Maxulk's current level of technology. It would be prudent in the immediate future to avoid Theranan fleet concentrations. As soon as we can, we should perform a substantial jump to clear this area. The engines will have sufficient charge for a moderate jump in 37 minutes.
The stupid progress bar was killing me. It still only showed 18%.
Did you get the data we need?
Huh?
Oh, yeah, sure, no problem. I'm still skimming through it. We have a complete view of the disposition of Theranan forces in the entire sector, future war plans, all the good stuff. With this, it will be easy to avoid them. Oh, and I also found confirmation the Theranan are pulling back from Paradise permanently. They're abandoning that entire wormhole cluster. It would have been an outlier to their main territory anyway. The Theranan were never enthusiastic about retaking Paradise. That was a Quistang operation. It seems that because an Elder starship crashed on Paradise a long time ago, the Quistang were eager to resume searching for Elder technology. Too bad they didn't find anything useful the first time they had the planet.
Stupid lizards.
The idea of a Maxult cruiser lurking out there, a ship we might not be able to detect until its weapons blew through our shields, scared the hell out of me. My plan had been to turn the duty officer ship back to Chang once we jumped away from the Theranan. Now I'd be stuck in the chair another hour to make sure we jumped safely away and the ship had not suffered any damage from stressing the engines with multiple jumps. Skippy insisted the critical engines were fine. His assurances didn't assure me. Him admitting that he had jumped us closer to the Theranan than necessary just to screw with them didn't make me confident in his judgment right then. The jump engines achieved sufficient charge, and Desai asked whether she should initiate jump. I held off another 10 minutes to build up a safety margin. After the jump, and Skippy peevishly running a system diagnostic that I insisted on, I turned the chair over to Chang and retreated to a bathroom, where I almost barfed. Everyone on the ship, everyone on Earth, were counting on me. I was doing the best I could, and it wasn't good enough. Even with Skippy's stores of knowledge, there was too much we didn't know. We'd almost stumbled on top of a Maxult's warship that had even Skippy frightened. There were too many unknowns, and too much at stake. Splashing cold water on my face helped settle my nerves. I no longer felt nauseous. In the Theranan bathroom, I had to bend down to reach the sink, and my hands were trembling. Through my Z-phone, I called Skippy. "Hey, Skippy, we need to talk."
"Sure,"
he responded immediately, despite the fact that I knew he was talking to a half-dozen other people and running the ship and decrypting the petabytes of data he'd stolen from the Theranan command ship at the same time.
"What's up?"
"I need you to be completely serious for a minute. Can you do that?"
"If I have to."
"You're worried about something. I can tell by your voice." Likely he was also monitoring my blood pressure, skin reactions, eye movements, and whatever else he felt like looking at. "You said you were screwing with the Theranan."
"Yeah, that was fun."
"No, it wasn't. It put the Dutchman in unnecessary danger."
"Ah, I see the problem now."
"You're upset." "Joe, we were in no additional danger. Once I got into the Theranan command network, I knew ahead of time the actions of the Theranan ships that were trying to chase us away. Me having some fun didn't affect us. This time. Didn't affect us this time that you know of. You didn't know there was a Maxult's cruiser out there somewhere ready to blow this ship to pieces. Skippy, here's the problem. If something goes bad out there, You'll be stranded in deep space until you can take a distress call or something and lure a starship here. That sucks for you. Stuck alone for a while again, but you survived it before. You'll survive it again. Now, the stakes for us monkeys are a lot higher. When you put us at risk, you're risking my entire species. Everyone. My whole planet, and everyone and everything on it. We may be bacteria to you, and maybe you're being generous to consider us bacteria. To us, to me, this is everything. We risked a lot to come out here. Now we're risking the survival of humanity. If this mission fails, if we can't shut down the wormhole, if the Kristang stay in control of Earth, then we lose. I lose. Everything. Do you understand that? There was a moment of uncharacteristic silence. Then, Joe, is that a tear? I splashed some water on my face, I responded angrily and wiped the tear away with my sleeve. Thinking of my family, my hometown, friends, the cool dark woods where I'd spent so much time, thinking even of my parents' dog, had gotten me emotional. They were all counting on me and they didn't know it. I'm sorry, he said softly. I do understand what's at stake for you, for all of you. We made a deal. I'm going to keep my end of the bargain. I am going to shut down that wormhole, and I'm sorry to alarm you. We truly were not in any additional danger. But I won't do that again. I promise. Thank you. Another subject. Do the Thoranin know about this ship? Do they know they lost a star carrier? Skippy's voice went back to normal. He was happy to change the subject. Modifying our jump signature worked. I was monitoring the command ship's internal communications. They believed they were being shadowed by 3 Jarraptha light cruisers. They do know the Dutchman is missing. They don't know why. The good news is the Thoranin also lost another 2 ships, a frigate and a cruiser, around the same time and in the same area where the Dutchman disappeared. The Jarraptha have task forces hunting down Thoranin survivors. Our secret is safe for now. The commander of that Thoranin battle group sent a request to their fleet headquarters requesting permission to detach several ships to search for the Dutchman. The fleet denied that request. They don't want to commit any more resources to this area. They're writing this ship off. The operation the Jarraptha launched in this sector that resulted in the Ruha recapturing paradise has succeeded beyond expectations. The Thoranin have been forced to redeploy their forces. My analysis is that the Jarraptha originally planned to halt their offensive by now. Because of their unexpected success, they are pressing their advantage and pulling in ships from other sectors. This operation has developed into a major, major fleet action across the entire sector. That's good for us, because the attention of the Thoranin and Kristang will be elsewhere. All right, then. Thoranin bathrooms didn't have mirrors. They must have thought vanity about external appearance to be an undesirable holdover from their purely biological past. No way did I want to go back on the bridge looking like I'd almost been sick. A shaky commander was not good for crew morale. To make a mirror, I shined the Z-phone screen on my shirt and checked my face as best I could. The face that looked back was tired. Yes. I could blame it on that. Straightening my shoulders, I opened the door and walked back down the corridor and onto the bridge. Chang nodded and stepped out of the chair for me. Colonel, no sign of a Maxalt ship out there? I asked. Chang and Skippy would have notified me right away. I was making conversation to avoid awkwardness. Chang shook his head. No sign of any pursuit. We're charging engines. He pointed to the display that indicated a current 12% charge. For another series of jumps. Mr. Skippy reports that the wormhole we intended to use may be used by Maxalt's ships in the near future. We have altered course for a different wormhole. ETA to the next jump is 3 hours, 12 minutes. That was also shown as a countdown on the display. And we'll be approaching the wormhole in 4 days.
4 days?
Let's make sure everyone gets plenty of rest then. We'll need... Skippy interrupted us.
God damn it! Skippy shouted. Shit! You got to be kidding me, fucking pinheads. Sneaky fucking little green men.
Jesus Christ, Skippy, what is it? I asked, panicked, and sat down quickly in the chair. Chang dashed out of the bridge to his duty station in the CIC just beyond the glass. There wasn't anything new on the displays, certainly no glaring orange symbol for a Maxalt ship. Desai turned to me and held up her hands in confusion, a finger poised over the silver button to activate a pre-programmed emergency micro-jump away. I held up a finger to hold her. Are we in danger? Immediate danger?
Us? Skippy sounded distracted.
No, we're in no danger. Not any more than usual. Who is in trouble are those rotten, stinking, sneaky Theranin.
Skippy was angry, genuinely angry. His liberal use of swear words had startled me. It was unlike him, in my limited experience.
If I get my hands on them again, I'm going to make them wish they'd never tried to be clever.
What did they do to you?
Me? Oh, they didn't do anything to me. Not directly. They made me look like a fool. There was bitterness in his voice. They hid something important from me. Something I should have known, should have expected. Damn it!
He was rambling. It alarmed me. Scanning the displays again, there was still nothing new that I could see. Desai moved a finger off the jump button and rested it on the panel right next to the button. What the hell could Skippy be raging about? The Theranin task force was still where it was supposed to be. No anomalous lights were on the display. In fact, no other lights were on the display. We were in deep interstellar space. The only other thing likely to be around was scattered individual hydrogen atoms, and they didn't appear on the display. Skippy took a deep breath. At least he appeared to take an audible deep breath.
When I cracked their command ship's encryption, surprisingly sophisticated, by the way, they must have stolen it from the Maxalts. I can't imagine the Maxalts would have given it to them. No match for my incredible powers, of course. It was, though, a minor challenge to me, sort of like doing a crossword puzzle. Not a tough crossword puzzle, you know, like when the clue is about something obscure like 17th-century Hungarian poetry, unless you're an expert on 17th-century Hungarian poetry or ancient Hungarian literature in general. Really, if you studied any kind of Renaissance or Baroque-era European literature, Skippy, huh? Oh, a little off-topic there, I guess. Where was I? Where was I?
Desai looked at me and I rolled my eyes.
You can store all human knowledge in a tiny part of your memory, and you can't remember what you were talking about 10 seconds ago? 10 seconds in your slow time sense, Joe. For me, entire species could have evolved, thrived, and gone extinct in that time. My mind wanders. Oh yeah, I was talking about their encryption. I dug into the database on the Theranin command ship and found something interesting. Very interesting. It's not widely known even among the Theranin. Their leadership keeps this information closely guarded, and I can see why. Because if this secret gets out, the Theranin will lose a big advantage. The Theranin have planted a nanovirus aboard many, if not most, Krystang warships. Any Krystang warship that hitches a ride on a Theranin star carrier gets infected during the process, if the star carrier is equipped with the nanovirus. The Dutchman is equipped to generate the nanovirus. Before I took control, this ship's AI had already determined that the flower was infected, so it never activated the nanovirus controller. This ship's crew wasn't aware the nanovirus even exists.
Interesting. I guess. What is a nanovirus? What I really wanted to know was why Skippy had gotten so upset about it.
It's a method of linking atoms by quantum.
Damn. I can't tell you monkeys about that. You wouldn't understand it anyway.
Think of it as a way to pre-program elements of a Krystang ship so that when the Theranin activate the system, the atoms assemble into nanomachines that can take control of the ship. Physical control. Not only control through software. Until the nanovirus is activated, there is no way the Krystang, at their pathetic level of technology, could ever know their ship is infected. That's important, because there are simple ways of scrambling the nanovirus to render it inert. Even the Krystang could do that. And the Theranin wouldn't know the nanovirus on a particular Krystang ship had been scrambled until they tried to activate it.
Great. That is important to us how?
Because, Skippy said slowly, if I'd known about the nanovirus, I could have used it to take control of the flower. We wouldn't have needed to jack me into a wall port. And the nanovirus allows me to take complete control, even parts of a Krystang ship that are hardened against cyber attack.
I'm sorry, Joe. If I had known about the nanovirus, we wouldn't have needed to fight our way through the flower compartment by compartment.
Ah, He was feeling guilty about the people we'd lost. You didn't know, Skippy.
I should have. This is an old and relatively simple technology. I should have anticipated the Theranon would have discovered it or stolen it, purchased it along the way.